Tomatoes, tomato paste you fry to make sure it doesn't stick. You got it to a boil, you shove in all your sausage and your meatballs. Huh? A little bit of wine. A little bit of sugar.
Delicious.
And that's my trick.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore.
Enough. I'm so sick and tired of hearing you people talk about food, food, food. That's all anybody ever talks about is prosciutto, cheese, and fava beans. I'm drowning here.
Jesus Christ, take it easy.
We're not even engaged yet.
When you're married, you'll understand the importance of fresh produce.
I eat with gusto, damn your bet, my country, tis of thee. I eat for social progress. I eat for victory.
Stay hungry! Stay hungry! Stay hungry!
You want some more?
Good evening and welcome to Mouthful, the Wine Country's Most Delicious Hour. It's Michelle and Jordan. How are you doing this evening? Beautiful spring day, huh? It's just lovely out there today. Not so much fun for allergy sufferers, but still really pretty. Great farmer's market. Beautiful butter lettuces right now. The ones I got today were from Singing Frog Farms, and they have some lovely tender butter lettuce. Tonight we're going to talk about single malt scotch, and I don't think it's something we've ever done here on Mouthful, which sort of surprises me. I think that understanding single malt scotch is sort of a specialty of its own. I remember one time I was in New York, I was in Manhattan, and I was working at a food event, and we went out afterwards for drinks, and the three of us who were left, two of them said, oh, let's have a scotch. And I really didn't know anything. And they ordered, you know, these, like, I don't know, $27, $35 glasses. I don't know what I had. And they sat there looking at it, and then they'd look at each other. It's like, oh, smell this. And they just did this whole mysterious thing. And I took a sip, and it's like, oh, my God, it tastes like fire. And then I went to Scotland. I was invited to go on a trip to explore some Scotch distilleries in Islay, then north, on the northern part of the island, and then on the eastern side of the island. And it was very interesting. It was really, really interesting. The most interesting thing to me at first, I didn't think was at all associated with Scotch. After traveling quite a bit to get to not only from San Francisco to New York to London to Scotland, and finally travel all the way to Islay and get into my hotel room, I really wanted a shower. And I turned on the water, and it looked like it was root beer. And I was like, do I need to call the front desk? And I went and I turned on the other faucet, the sink, and it came out the same. And I just thought, you know, I have a feeling it's supposed to be like this, even though I have no idea what's going on. So I went ahead and took a shower, and it was kind of weird. And then that night we went to Laphroaig, and they started talking about the peat and the water that comes through the many, many, many layers of peat, and it comes out the color of root beer. And we're going to hear about how that peat influences Scotch, among other things. And at the Laphroaig tasting we did, they really set us up in exactly the wrong way. Like, I don't think when you do a tasting, you should say to any portion of the group, you people are probably not going to like this, because then you predispose people to have a reaction. Just let people taste. So what they said was, well, we're going to taste Laphroaig, and I should just warn you, ladies don't like Laphroaig, so just wait, and we'll have this other one for you. I was like, what? And it turns out that through all the spirits that I tasted while I was there, Laphroaig was my favorite, and it still is. And I don't know if it was just because I'm perverse and didn't like to be told what ladies don't do. But I actually really, really liked it. And I'm hoping tonight our guests might be able to shed some light on why I respond to it in that way. And on that long-winded note, I'm going to introduce two of my favorite Sonoma County people. We have Fred Thumhart, who you may remember from the wine department at Traversos. Welcome to Mouthful.
Thank you very much.
And returning for, I think, the third time, Michael Traverso, son of George Traverso, grandson of Rico Traverso. Welcome back.
Thank you.
It's great to see you. It's great
good to see you, too.
It's nice to see this bottle of William Selyem wine. You're working there right now?
I am working there. I've been there over a year. So I'm our hospitality manager. And, so I handle all our group visits, do a little bit with sales and marketing as well.
Do people, do they have a tasting room?
We don't have an open tasting room.
Okay, so you have to make an appointment.
So you give us a call and look us up online, williamselyem.com, and make an appointment. Plan about 2 weeks out. We get a lot of demand.
So you are pretty busy, okay.
Yeah, we're very busy, and we have products that you can taste and buy and enjoy the new building. We have a new building. It's about 2 years old.
Oh, so. That I haven't seen.
Yeah, it's right on West Side Road.
Yes. Yeah, exactly where it is in that golden triangle of great Pinot Noir vines.
It's like the Rodeo Drive of Pinot Noir.
There you go. That's perfect. Well, you two formed, before Traversos closed, you had started the Sonoma County Single Malt Society. Is that right?
Well, actually, we didn't start the society until after the store
closed.
Okay,
so you were doing the tastings, though.
Well, we were. We had whiskey clubs. We had an American whiskey club. We had a Scotch whiskey club. Kind of stepping back a few years, I came to the store in 98 working for Hubline Spirits prior and kind of brought a spirits influence into the wine department there. And then, I don't know if you remember, but you wrote a great article in the late 90s about...
It was just after I'd gotten back from Scotland. Yeah. I loved doing that article.
And the whiskey industry in the 90s was really suffering. The vodka business was big. Wine and beer were bigger than spirits. So we would get a lot of these small little bottles, sampler bottles.
That's when I sent a lot of people there.
And they're so hard to get nowadays because single malts have just taken off. And
so it's harder to get the little bottles now?
Harder to get the little bottles. They're more costly for these distilleries to
sure, that's a lot
produce.
Of glass.
It's a lot of glass, a lot of packaging costs. Uh-huh. But we, slowly, little by little, built up the program. Fred came in and he brought the passion to the store as well. And we had there over 200 single malts at one time, had a lot of great press. We were one of only six retailers mentioned in a UK publication for our selection.
That's right, yeah.
And
for a couple years.
For a couple years. And that gave birth to, the seminars, the tastings. We'd bring talent from Scotland to come and do, events. We always had the mantra, I still do, you got to touch it, taste it, feel it. And we bring the history, all of that to the table. And when the store closed, we had, a couple hundred people that were just depressed that they weren't able to come in and purchase and go to these seminars. So, we kind of let the dust settle, and then Fred and I got together, and we legally formed what we call the Sonoma County Single Malt Society. And we have people that join as members, and we produce at least this year we'll have six public tastings that people sign up for. And then we also do private events, too.
Oh, you do?
Yeah, so people have hired us, and we go into their homes and or offices or whatnot and do seminars on single malts. So, yeah, we started over a little over a year ago, and we've got a lot of plans kind of moving into the future. So,
And the tastings and seminars take place at the Hyatt?
We have been partnering with the Hyatt in Railroad Square in Santa Rosa. That's been sort of our home base for our public events, and they've been great to work with. So. Mm-hmm.
But how many people can attend?
We max out about 95, 100 people.
Oh, I didn't realize they were that big.
Yeah, so we, when we started these, they were a handful of maybe 12 to 20 people, and we moved into larger rooms, and we're in a pretty good sized room right now where we can handle about 100 comfortably. The next step would be take over the ballroom, which the experience would be a little different.
Yeah, definitely.
The cost of product is a little higher too.
So
we kind of have that diminishing return.
Mm-hmm. So, and you lose your intimacy as well.
Exactly.
With that.
Yeah.
Yes.
So what is it? What is this mystique about single malts that make that people find so compelling?
Well, I think, you know, particularly where we are here in the wine country, mm-hmm. I don't like that term because I've grown up here in Sonoma County.
We had with Empire.
It was not the wine country. But, you know, living here in Sonoma County, I think people are very passionate about food, about wine. There's many people that are involved in our society that are winemakers or winery principals. Mm-hmm. And we want to know how this is made. We want to know why a whiskey from the island of Islay tastes different than something from the space side. And there's a lot of history behind that. There's a lot of different production methods behind that. And we find it totally fascinating, and we love to share this with people. Mm-hmm. And I, too, went over to Scotland years back and bought a barrel of whiskey for the store that we sampled and selected. And you know, that was something that was special to me. And just mm-hmm. going there, as you've discovered, is just an enchanting place. So, you know, taking all that, wrapping it all together, and then being able to work with some of these suppliers to share that passion is kind of why we've put this together. And I know Fred can tell you too. He's currently working at Oliver's, and he's been able to share that with his customers as well. So
it's probably one of the biggest things that I miss from what we used to do with the store that way, was that you just would have people come in off the street and say, "Hey, what do you got that's new?
Yes.
What's fun? What can you tell me about this?" Or
yeah, that's something I miss from the customer side of it. But I have to say, God bless Oliver's. I was Traverso's hadn't been closed that long, and I was wandering around the wine aisles of the Stony Point store, which is the one closest to where I live, and somebody came up. I probably just looked totally lost. Somebody came up and asked if she could help me, and I burst into tears. And I just said, "I'm a refugee from Traverso's. I definitely need help." And she was great. She was great. But you don't see, I mean, it's a big grocery store. You don't see the same people there over and over. So you don't get to recognize the people who work there in the same. It's a bigger staff. I mean, it's just a bigger staff.
And it's a bigger store in terms of
really
the products
helpful.
that we carry as well. So it's, you know, it presents its own unique mm-hmm. challenge coming from much more of a specialty market.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you in the wine department?
I am in the wine department.
Okay. And at the Montecito store?
At the Montecito store, yes.
Okay.
So we've, you know, it's definitely different, but we still try and maintain, I try and maintain that same type of level of service that Michael and I strive for when we were working together. So
cool. I will have to find the Montecito store. I went out to I'm having a problem with my headphones. There they go. It's a wire. I seem to be plagued by headphone wire problems lately. that's sort of a Bermuda Triangle of Sonoma County, that area out there. So you're there. I will find it, and I will find it this week. We're going to take a little musical break here on Mouthful, and then we're going to come back, and we're going to taste what all this is about.
Scotch and soda, mutton your eye. Baby, do I feel high? Oh, me, oh, my. Do I feel high? Dry martini, drink of gin. Hold a spell, you've got me in. Oh my, do I feel high? People won't believe me. They think that I'm just bragging. But I could feel the way I do and still be on the wagon. All I need is
of your smile, sunshine of your eyes, oh me, oh my. Do I feel higher than a kite can fly? Give me loving, baby, I feel high.
That was Scotch and Soda. And by, yes, it was by... tell me quick. I'm just blanking.
Kingston.
It's right. It was by the Kingston Trio. Mm. And I heard that. It's like, really? That's the Kingston Trio? It sounded like some lounge singer to me. Anyway, we are talking about single malts. And what have you poured, Fred?
We have with us this evening a one of the bottles that we'll be pouring at the tasting we are doing in a little over a week's time from Brookladdie. This is their Organic, which is a multi-vintage, slow-trickled Islay whiskey.
Oh, it's Islay. Cool.
But probably the biggest difference with this compared to what else we brought and your experience at Laphroaig is this is relatively low on the peat count. You're looking at anywhere probably from 5 to 10 parts per million of peat to this, mm-hmm. where your experience with the 10-year-old Laphroaig was probably closer to 40 parts per million.
So. Can we talk a little bit about what that means? Can we talk about how it's made?
Yeah, you know, another thing, too, to keep in mind is, you know, a lot of your listeners might remember their grandfathers drinking scotch and, you know, scotch and soda and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And these are not your grandfather's whiskeys. You know, single malts, I kind of tell people when we talk in our club meetings or society meetings is, you know, these are like single vineyard wines. They're really, really focused, almost like the French term terroir. They're really, really... really trying to showcase that part of Scotland, but also the craft of the distiller, mm-hmm. the barrels they use, the way, the method, you know, the filtration. These are both the whiskeys we brought tonight are non-chill filtered, so they have a lot more texture to them. Non-chill filtered. Okay. So when the whiskey is being made, a lot of your pedestrian whiskeys that you see in supermarkets or mm-hmm. in the big brands that you see, they'll chill the product down and you're freezing. They strip out a lot of the oils. They do that because most consumers around the world, when they buy single malts, they'll put it in a glass and throw ice cubes in right mm-hmm. away, which, you know, whatever you like.
To each their own.
To each their own. But that cold ice, when it hits your whiskey, if it hasn't been filtered, like if you put ice in this whiskey.
Or even water.
Or even cold mm-hmm. water, you get almost like a cloudy formation developed. So most consumers out there would get scared, you know, freak out. And they'll call the distributor, the distillery, and want their money back. So
because it gets cloudy?
Mm-hmm. Because it gets cloudy. So that was the sort of the conventional method when whiskey, when single malts were being imported into the United States. But the purists, the whiskeys that we like to work with are what we consider ones with soul, and mm-hmm. a lot of they have texture, there's aromatics there, and they're really special. So these again are not your grandfather's whiskeys. Yeah.
What does the word malt mean?
Well, I'll let Fred answer that.
Malt is basically when you're looking at single malt, it's a malted barley is what they're referring mm-hmm. to in that regard. So it's using just that one grain.
So it's barley.
And
how do you malt it?
Malt it, what they're going to be doing is they're going to germinate the in essence, will spread the barley out on the floor, put water, add water to it, and start a fermentation process.
Okay.
So it'll start to germinate. And once they reach the optimal sugar level at that point, then they'll arrest that germination, and they'll do it by heat. In the case of most Islay whiskeys, they use peat in that.
And so they'll burn they dig up the peat, they burn it.
Yeah, they dry it like into little bricks,
yeah.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then they light it on fire. It's kind of what, if you kept that peat in the ground for another thousands of years, it'll turn into coal. So it's got the same sort of compounds,
uh-huh.
and they're using that, you know, historically they used peat to heat their homes, cook their food.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they'd say, "You reek like peat," you know, so that's, you know, in these little remote areas of Scotland, like Islay, which is a very remote little island off the west corner, southwest corner of of Scotland, Isle of Skye, a lot of these little remote places will use peat to cook their malt. Speyside, which is probably the most widely known.
Is that where Glendronach is?
Yeah, mostly anything with Glen
okay.
is there.
Yeah, so that's the
McCallum.
That's the third place we went.
Yeah,
it's Glendronach.
They have the most concentrated number of distilleries
in
the Speyside.
There were a lot.
Yes. So that's really kind of
then, so after you do that, after you the peat dries out, is that the purpose? Well, you're smoking it if you're burning the peat.
Well,
you got some
peat doesn't
flavor.
Really, peat really doesn't burn. It smokes more than it does anything that way. So what they've actually calculated is a formula for the amount of time spent with the peat smoke in the kernel of barley that they're drying that way, can actually calculate the amount of parts per million of peat each whiskey will have.
Wow. And then what happens?
They'll then take that once it's dried.
The barley.
Once the barley is dried that way, they'll in essence take that in, grind it, put it into a large tub, and make what they call a wort or a beer. Mm-hmm. And then they'll drain off the solids from that. They'll pump that over to their first still.
Now, that when they do they do that by adding water?
They add the same water that they use, same water that, in essence, you had coming out of your tap.
That peaty water.
So again, you're getting another
get this
influence.
Other layer.
Yes. Yep. Uh-huh. And whereas, like lowland whiskeys, you get more of the lavender and the lighter, flowery, lighter flavors. But speaking of Isla, this whiskey here, you're going to get that influence from the water as well. Mm-hmm. So water is a huge, huge, important thing. And some of the best waters, I love water.
Me too.
Some of the best waters I had are in Scotland, and I still do not know why we can't access them. We used to a little bit at the store, Highland Springs, which was great. But
New York City tap water. It is so good.
Oh, really?
I remember the first time I was in Manhattan staying in my publisher's apartment alone, and I was thirsty, and I took a drink of water, and being from Sebastopol, it's like, yeah, that's all there is. I tasted it, and it's like, is this just the romance of New York City? I must have had 5 or 6 glasses. And it turns out it's known as some of the best water in the country because it comes from this really pristine area. It's extraordinary.
Hmm.
Anyway.
I'll have to try it the next time I'm
there.
Somewhere
next time you're
in New
York. Have some tap water.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know if the old pipes in various places influence it, but the tap water in New York is fabulous. Okay, so you make the wort, which is basically beer.
It's like beer. It's like a strong Scotch beer.
Right. And then what? They'll drain off the liquid for that. They actually will take the solids, reuse those. They'll actually feed those to cattle and sheep and other things that way. So they're using everything all the way through the processor.
That must be some good bacon.
I would think so.
Yes. Yeah, good bacon.
And then they pump in. Also, with a single malt, they use 2 stills. It's double distilled, so they have their low wine still, which will give you your first process. Once they go through that, it comes out at about, I want to say, 20 or 30%.
Percent alcohol.
Percent alcohol. So it's pretty low, hence the reason for the low wine stills. Once that's completed and cooled, they'll pump that into their fine wine stills, and that's where you get the product, the finished product, before it's actually put into barrels for age.
Yeah, and then it's typically...
For 3 years, it has to be aged at least 3 years before it can be called single malt.
Okay.
Yeah, there are rules, like, in France with the AOC and the Italians with DOCG.
Sure.
So Scotland, for it to be called Scotch whiskey, it has to be distilled in Scotland. Mm-hmm. It has to be bottled, aged in Scotland. So you can't call something Scotch if it's not.
There
whiskey is a very generic term, but Scotch has to be, from the motherland.
So all Scotch is whiskey, and clearly all whiskey is not Scotch.
Correct.
Is bourbon just another type of whiskey that's made in Kentucky?
Well, bourbon can be made anywhere in the
world.
Oh, yeah, bourbon.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, bourbon is a term, and we're going to have a bourbon event some point during this week. So we're not just all about Scotch whiskey. The bourbon whiskey is made has to be made of 51% corn, and you can use a lot of other grains.
Uh-huh.
So Scotch whiskey is. There's only 2 spirits I know of in the world. There's Scotch whiskey and tequila that are made from one particular product.
Mm-hmm.
But not to digress.
Oh, please. Melville's all about digression.
But Yeah, bourbon has a little bit more of an Americana story behind it. Mm-hmm. They have to use new American oak barrels to age it, at least 51% corn. Most people use rye as well, but 51% corn. And there's a minimum age requirement as well.
Uh-huh.
But everybody thought you had to be in Bourbon County, Kentucky.
Yeah.
But you can make bourbon really anywhere.
Anywhere, okay.
And still call it bourbon.
Ah, okay. So why don't you two talk about this that we're tasting? And it's, let's see, it's
Brooklady. This was an old distillery that was abandoned, and an independent group purchased it a while back. And Fred and I had the privilege to meet some of these individuals over the years. And this is one of the only handful of whiskey distilleries on the island of Islay. And Brooklady, they kind of beat by their own drum.
Yes, definitely.
You'll see, like, we brought another one from Ardbeg, which is a traditional distillery.
I'm really looking forward to tasting that.
And that's
a
good one, too. And that's, most whiskey distillers will bottle things with numbers, 10 years, mm-hmm. 20 years, 15 years, 16 years. But the guys at Brooklady do something a little different. They come up with all kinds of crazy names, crazy blends. They love to do things they call acing, additional cask enhancement. Traditionally, these distillers in the old days, they'd find anything they could put whiskey in. But I'd say in the more modern era, sherry barrels were what were sought after.
Mm-hmm.
So the sherry would come by boat to the United Kingdom, and the British loved drinking sherry, and they would have all these empty barrels, and the Scots would take it and fill it with whiskey. So you'd get this beautiful whiskey that was aged in a sherry barrel, and you'd get the influence of the sherry.
Almost a sweet overlay.
Yes.
Definitely. You get a lot of toffees a lot of times that way, too.
But unfortunately, nobody's drinking sherry anymore.
Oh, really?
So a lot of these distilleries are using old bourbon barrels. So the bourbon industry can only use the barrel one time, and then mm-hmm. it must be discarded. So they find their way to Scotland or Mexico for tequila aging.
No one's drinking sherry anymore.
Unfortunately.
We just need to see more episodes of Downton Abbey.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Drink your sherry. It's good for the whiskey. I'll let Fred tell a little bit more about this, but this is one of the products that's relatively new. It's called the Organic. Brooklady is trying to become carbon neutral and doing a lot of other things that are good for the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And they're, again, one of the more independent distillers. They use only barley raised on the island of Islay and local water. Most distilleries on Islay that are kind of household names, one that we mentioned, they tend to distill on Islay, and then they put the barrels on a barge and send them to Glasgow. So they don't really age in Islay salty air.
And that salty air is so important.
All of those elements.
Definitely.
It's just like, again, like wine. The elements mm-hmm. make so much of what you're tasting. So
yeah.
I think this whiskey has a lot of soul, a lot of character. Mm-hmm. Everything these guys make, they're coming here April 5th to do a full bore tasting with us.
Oh, great.
So it's going to be special. So,
yeah, the thing I like about it, Scotch in general, first there's that powerful hit of alcohol, which is, I am a wimp when it comes to alcohol, but that dissipates, and then your palate is filled with all of these little delicate flavors, and one of them from the Islay whiskeys I've tasted is briny, mm-hmm. like salty. And
definitely.
I love it. It's like mm-hmm. it's like fog almost off the sea. There's just this very subtle quality. And the thing that I found about Laphroaig that I liked was there was a combination of that briny, foggy quality and bacon.
Hmm.
I just thought there was a little bit of bacon fat in there. And so that's what I like. And it's, it makes me want to be by a fire on a foggy, stormy mm-hmm. night by the ocean.
Oh, definitely a lot of the peated whiskeys. For sure that way, because they've got that nice richness that way. They've mm-hmm. got that smoky quality to mm-hmm. them.
So tell me some of the things that you two taste in this.
I get a lot of that kind of – I do get some sea salt. It's a kind of light whiskey. I get a little bit of corn sweetness maybe from the bourbon barrel it was aged in.
Mm-hmm.
But very young, very light. I think, this would be great that they have a lot of beautiful sea scallops over there.
Mm-hmm.
And if you do, you can use this to cook in them. And kind of
somebody was
it.
Just asking me how you cook with single malts.
Mm-hmm.
So just sear them in a little butter.
Yeah, a little
splash
butter.
Splash in some of this. It's a great idea.
One of the one of the presenters from actually the master distiller for Brooklady had mentioned one of the things that he likes to do with one of his heavily peated whiskeys is to just kind of put a little bit in the glass and flick it onto his oysters when he's cooking his either cooking his oysters or right before he eats them raw that way. So you get a little bit of that smoky quality to them as well.
Oh, I'll have to try that.
Yeah, that was an event we went to a little while back at the fifth floor in San Francisco. They have a great whiskey selection. They were holding a little seminar. We were invited, and the master distiller for Brooklady was there, and we had a product called Octomore,
yes,
which is one of the most heavily peated whiskeys in the world, and we're going to be pouring it on the 5th of April.
We're going to be pouring the heavily peated new version that they've just done. They're on their fifth rendition of it. First one was 135 parts per million of peat. So, like I said, your typical Lafroy or Ardbeg is going to be about 40. They're now, with Octomore 5, I believe, 169 parts per million of peat.
It's just this incredible layered whiskey. But, you know, after dinner, you get a nice piece of really bittersweet chocolate, like the most intense chocolate you can get, and throw that in your mouth and have a sip of that whiskey. And it's just an incredible experience.
It's a great combination.
We're going to take another musical break. We'll be right back with more Scotch. It's Mouthful. My guest this evening, Michael Traverso and Fred Thumhart of the Sonoma County Single Malt Society. We are tasting single malts. What's up next, boys?
So the next whiskey we have is another Islay whiskey. It's an Ardbeg, which I'll let Fred pour that for us here.
Yeah, I'll give you a nice little comparison between this. It's going to be much more similar to Lafroy, higher peat, obviously, about 40 parts per million. Similar to Lafroy, where they actually get the peat around the island will have different components to it. So you get more, with the Brooklady, you don't get as much of an iodine kind of quality to it, which I think most of them believe is part of that brininess from spending so much time closer, being packed it closer to sea level. So you get that nice kind of iodine quality that I always associate with most Islay whiskeys.
Now, is peat, if I remember elementary school science, peat is just layers and layers and layers of moss, right?
Right, right, exactly.
Any plant material.
Yeah.
Occasionally they find like an old Scottish guy down there. Like I saw that on the National Geographic.
And really?
Yeah, these little guys that were like, you know, medieval fighters that fell into these bogs. The bogs kind of hardened it preserves a lot of fossils and things. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. It's kind of compressed material, and it is flammable. So people in the history, they'd use, like I said, to heat their homes, and it was quite a important thing. They find it in Ireland as well. But this whiskey here is aged 10 years in barrels and then bottled. Another non-chill filtered or unchill filtered. So, like I said, most of these distilleries will chill the product down to strip out those oils, and they also lower the alcohol down to 40%. Mm-hmm. But both of these whiskeys are both 46% alcohol, so you get a lot more depth.
Is extraordinary.
Yes, it's kind of one of our favorites, and it's very traditional. Both distilleries are near each other, but they kind of, like a lot of wineries that are next door neighbors, they make things a little different.
Differently. Yeah, this was one of the very, a bottle of Ardbeg was one of the very last things that I bought at Traverso's. But I gave it as a gift, and she hasn't opened the bottle yet, so I haven't tried it yet. This is really, I think you taste that, I think you sense the oils. You sense that richness.
We recommend, too, you might want to drop a little bit of water in your whiskey. The Scotch tend to call that releasing the beast. And it's kind of like gives you opens up the experience. Taste it without water first, and then you drop a little bit of water. It's kind of like waking up on a bright, kind of sunny Sonoma County morning that's cool and damp after a springtime rain, and you walk out and all those flowers, everything is just so enhanced. And that's what you get. You're just kind of making all that just pop in your glass.
They end up releasing all these water-soluble oils that are in there, and that really gives you that extra amount of flavor.
Yeah, this one is just layer upon layer upon layer, and I do get that, the brininess, the smokiness, and that richness, I think, from the oils is what makes me think of bacon. You know, if you're having a BLT on a cold summer night, this is what you want alongside it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
One thing we haven't talked about, what do these really premium, these really special handmade single malts sell for?
Oh, there's a large range. I'd say probably base price retail is probably going to be around the 50 to 60 range, and then going upward.
Going up from there.
There's a lot of costs that a lot of people will ask for whiskeys that cost a lot of money, thinking that
it's
they're
be better.
But what you're paying for really is the distiller is paying a lot of tax. You know, they're paying tax upon distillation, and then they're putting this product in a barrel and putting it in the back of their warehouse and letting it age there year after year after year. The Angel takes their share, so we're losing evaporation.
But yes, and we should say that the Angel's share is evaporation.
Right. In the wine industry, we can top the barrels, but in Scotland, we cannot top whiskey. So the distillery is factoring that into their costs, and then eventually you're getting a product that's bottled, and so they're factoring all that cost into the bottle. So costs can be a little bit kind of smoke and mirrors, if you will.
Yeah. And plus, it's not like buying a $50, $60, $70 bottle of wine, which you drink at dinner.
Right.
You know,
this is something you can enjoy for
years.
Years.
I mean, I've had bottles of Lafroig in my cupboard for years because I have it once or twice a year. That's it.
That's right. You can invest in a really nice bottle, and you don't have to drink it within a day. So.
Right. And if you do, you'll probably really regret it.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah, this is really lovely. Here, I'm going to let the engineer smell. He can't drink, but he can smell.
One of the interesting things, too, when you look at the single malts that way is you've got you've got the malt itself, which has its own flavor characteristics. So mm-hmm. the younger the whiskey, the more you're actually tasting the malt itself.
Mm-hmm.
The more time it spends in wood, the more wood influence mm-hmm. you're getting. It's the same thing with wines that way as well. So they calculate about 10 to 11 years, it's about even. After that, you're getting more dominance of the wood.
Oh, okay.
In fact, one of the worst whiskeys that we've ever tried was a 30-year-old, and it tasted like a dry-rotted piece of wood.
Really?
Yes.
Interesting.
And it was a very expensive bottle and uh-huh. a very well-known distiller, but you have so much influence of the wood versus the actual malt. So, mm-hmm. You know, whiskeys in that 12 to 16 year range tend to be kind of at a nice sweet spot where you mm-hmm. can still get the influence of the malt, the influence of the area, the region, but not the overpowering factor of the wood.
Mm-hmm.
But we're seeing a lot of trends that started out actually Glenmorangie in the 90s when people were kind of turning away from single malts and looking at other spirits, and wine and beer was gaining on spirits in general. They were using other woods to sort of give it some flavor. So a lot of these distillers might start the product resting in a bourbon barrel, and then they'll take that out and they'll enhance it in other type of barrels, barrels that contained wine, barrels that contain Madeira. So there's a lot. Portwood is very famous. So there's a lot of really unique things happening out there.
Yeah, a lot of cross-pollination.
Pretty much.
And I would think in those situations, the influence is coming from what was in that barrel rather than
correct.
From the wood. Like, say, with mm-hmm. real balsamic vinegar, you're getting, you know, what is it, 11 different
right.
types of wood. But here you're getting different alcohols.
Right, different
that's interesting.
Products. Yeah, it's very, very interesting. So there's a lot of things happening. And again, it kind of plays into the whole wine community and mm-hmm. and that and whatnot.
Mm-hmm. And Bruichladdich is probably one of the most influential in a lot of that. They've really pushed kind of the extremes
mm-hmm.
in terms of the different types of wood that they've been aging whiskeys in. They did a whole series called the First Growth Series where they aged them all in the First Growth Bordeaux.
Mm-hmm.
So in essence, the same whiskey had been aged for the same amount of time, but then they put it into these barrels that way, and you've got a very unique flavor profile from each one of those.
Mm-hmm.
Same base whiskey, but then that influence of that different wine barrel just influenced that whiskey so differently.
Mm-hmm. You get flavor is also visual. You get this candy apple red because the barrel contained wine.
You just named my favorite color, candy apple
red.
Yeah,
it was an incredible scent. Almost pomegranate in some uh-huh. of them. So really unique things. And Bruichladdich, like Fred said, kind of on the forefront of doing mm-hmm. a lot of creative things.
When what year did they buy that abandoned place?
They bought Bruichladdich was purchased from Brown-Forman by this investment group in 2000.
Okay.
Took them a full year. So in 2001, they actually had their first distillate.
Okay.
From the new
really
ownership
new.
Group. They are. They're not the newest distillery on Isla. There's mm-hmm. there's a newer distillery out there that is producing some incredible whiskeys for such a young age. They're releasing mm-hmm. them at 3 years, some at 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And they're also doing the same thing. They're growing the grain on Isla. They're harvesting. They're doing
cool.
entire process
uh-huh.
themselves that way, which is really a unique process for making whiskey that way.
I don't know if this is a fair question to ask. I don't know if it can be answered, but is there a really fairly large physically distillery in downtown Isla, like right there when you're walking through that the crooked streets? Is it Ardbeg?
Probably is.
I just
is.
Remember I... walking by something and seeing this, I mean, white stucco building with the name on it, and it was huge, and we didn't go there, but in my mind's eye, it's Ardbeg. Is that?
It could be.
That
yeah.
could be. It
okay.
could be. It could be.
Yeah, without having been to Isla. I know that Laphroaig's right on the water. In fact, they get.
Yeah,
they actually
sort of
age
around,
there.
You had to drive. It was, 30 minutes maybe to go from Laphroaig, and then you had to go all the way around with there was water there, and I forget if it was a bay or whatever. And then you'd pass a church and a church graveyard, and then you'd make this big left turn and then right turn into the town. And right there, when you're making the 90-degree right turn, is this big distillery, and it's got a pub next to it, pub and restaurant, I think. I think it's Ardbeg. And we went in and tried a few single malts and had something to eat, and it was a cool little town.
Yeah, they're very they're very proud of their unique culture there.
Yeah,
you know, they consider themselves, you know, Celtic or Celtic. You can you can actually on a clear day you can look over and see Northern Ireland. And
I
you
know
can,
that was yeah. a, we saw it, and I've never been to Ireland, and I'm Irish, and that was a great moment to see it.
Mm-hmm.
It really was. Do we have another one to taste?
Nope, we just
okay. This
two.
Is it. Okay, I wanted to be sure. I didn't want to say, Michelle, wait, we have another. How do people get involved with Single Malt Society?
Well, we have a website, SonomaSingleMalt.com.
People can join there, right?
We have a form they can print out and fill out and send
We're
it to us.
We're not too fancy yet. We're still working on it.
We're still working on it.
It's a pretty good deal, though. It doesn't cost that much to join.
So just a one-time fee.
Yeah.
You can join as a member, couples membership as well. And that kind of locks you into a special discounted rate to attend our events.
Yeah.
So we're trying to, you know, it's a new project. We're really trying to gain a lot of momentum. We've kind of put on the board at least six events this year is sort of our goal. We've also partnered up with a local distiller, Fred and Amy Groth, out in Sonoma, that make Hello Cello.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
so we've invested in their Kickstarter kind of program with their still. So we're going to be hoping to have some of our own products soon.
Oh, interesting.
So that's going to be a lot of fun. And we're going to do an event with them later this year.
You'll let me know, right?
No,
of course. We always let you know.
I like going over there when they're having their lemon peeling party.
Yes.
Oh, it smells so good.
We've talked to them about doing an event where you can actually go in and have a chance to work their still that way.
Mm-hmm.
So you get a real hands-on experience of what it takes to make a distillate that way. So it's going to be very exciting.
That sounds really great. And they're really doing a good job.
Doing a great job.
Yeah.
Yeah. We sold a lot of their products at Traverso's when they started, and Fred continues. You know, and Oliver's as well. So that's, you know, we're kind of moving forward. But yeah, to go online, SonomaSingleMalt.com is the easiest way. We have all of our contact information online if people have questions. And we have very, very limited availability to attend. So the people that are our members are the first.
They get the first shot.
They get the first shot to come. So we don't want to make these, you know, 300, 400, 500 people
no,
seminars.
I think you're smart.
Yeah, so we're trying to make it very personal. The the people that we bring to actually conduct the tastings are either whiskey, the master distillers themselves, or actual brand ambassadors from the distillery. Uh-huh. So it's really special, and they love to come and do these for us.
Okay, we're going to come back and talk a little bit more in detail about the tastings. With first, one more musical break.
There stands the glass that will ease all my pain, that will settle my brain. It's my first one today. There stands the glass that will hide all my tears, that will drown all my fears. Brother, I'm on my way. I wonder where you are tonight. I wonder if you are all right. I wonder if you think of me in my misery. There stands the glass, fill it up to the brim, while my troubles grow dim. It's my first one today. Think of me in my misery. There stands the glass, fill it up to the brim, troubles grow dim. It's my first one today.
It's Mouthful. My guest this evening, Mike Traverso and Fred Thumhart. And, you know, if you're calling, we can't answer the phone because we're talking. So, sorry about that. The phone is ringing, as you might have guessed. I wanted to talk just a little bit. Could you put us in a tasting?
Sure.
So we've got what, 75, 80, up to 100 people sitting at tables.
We set it up like a classroom.
Okay.
It's an an educational tasting.
Okay.
I mean, this is, you know, a structured
not
event.
A structured, it's not wine tasting.
Exactly. It's not something that's just a free for all. Uh-huh. Like a lot of other right. things can happen that way. So you're trying to put together an order for what you're tasting the whiskeys that way as well.
We try to break it up. We'll at a minimum have usually 8 different products,
uh-huh.
8 different single malts, and we'll break it up usually 4, and then we'll have a little what we call a halftime break, and the chef at the Hyatt will bring out foods. A lot of great cheeses,
uh-huh.
you know, some of those rich like gorgonzolas
mm-hmm.
Can pair well. It's not really a food and whiskey pairing, but
no,
we
but
tailor
you,
the
you
food,
do get yes. a little bit of food.
Smoked salmon is an excellent pairing.
Sure.
Again, we said scallops. We don't get that super fancy there, but pulled pork works really well sometimes too.
And I wonder if the chef there has ever made gravlax using whiskey.
That's a good question.
I would, if we can get a good price. I used to make gravlax all the time. It wasn't that long ago that our salmon coming out of Bodega Bay was so good and so inexpensive, and I would make gravlax 2 or 3 times a season, and I would love to experiment making it with some of this Ardbeg. So you have some.
So we have a little food at the break, and we keep it really paced out. It's about a 2-hour event, and there's a lot of questions and answers
mm-hmm.
that take place. We also allow people to come and revisit the whiskeys and talk personally to the presenters as well. And then through Oliver's Market, we actually sell the product. So our society, we don't have at this point a license to sell direct to consumers, but mm-hmm. we will sell and offer all the products through Oliver's, and Fred mm-hmm. handles that at mm-hmm. the store.
It's like you used to do that with Traverso's.
Right, exactly.
You could pre-order everything that
exactly.
was going to be tasted.
That's what we do. We set up a pre-order sale sheet for the event that way,
uh-huh.
so you have that in front of you. Typically, we'll have the tasting order that we're doing, and then right after I started at Oliver's, I approached them about becoming our retail partner for this, so that what we wanted to be able to have people do is be able to purchase a product that they actually taste there, because
mm-hmm.
a lot of times the whiskeys that we have presented are very unusual, and you don't find them in every store.
And very limited.
Very limited.
Very
as
limited.
Well.
I mean, just a handful of bottles available to the U.S. market. So it's really special. And another thing, too, that our presenters often tell us, and that's why we continue to have a lot of contact and future events coming, and this is really building, because even though Sonoma County, Santa Rosa is a small market, the attendance, the questions, the depth of knowledge that we bring our customers there, the people in our society, outpaces a lot of large markets around the United States. So these presenters that come all the way from Scotland, or if they're based in New York and they come to Little Sonoma County, they're just amazed that they see 100 people.
They love coming here.
They love coming here. And they'll do events in much larger cities with mm-hmm. half to a third of the crowd. So it's kind of a testament, again, I think, to our culture here, that
mm-hmm.
we're really into foods, we're into wine, we're really inquisitive, we want to know about things. It's more than just that basic bottle you're going to buy at the grocery stores.
Yeah. But I think you also have to, I mean, I know you wouldn't do this, but I'm going to. You have to give the two of you credit. You've really brought this to people in Sonoma County, and you've made it accessible in, I think, a pretty effective and unique way. So thanks very much to the two of you for doing that. I don't think a lot of larger communities, you know, have people like you. It's been really great. And don't mean to embarrass you by flattering you so much, but, you know, I really mean that. What's the average price, approximate price for tasting?
Tastings for us, when you are a member, are $35. So you get a discount based on...
That's a great price.
It is a great deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
General public admission that way is $50.
And $50 is... I mean, when you think of some... You go and get a glass of single malt at a bar. I mean, 18 seems an average price, and it can go easily go... I mean, I've seen 27, 36. So that is a... You guys are keeping it very accessible in that way as well.
Yeah, it's priced really to kind of... Again, for the consumer, it's educational, and you know, as our society evolves and builds, and as we kind of get more mature in what we're doing, you know, we're going to probably have more layers, different experiences, and we're excited about that. So.
Yeah. Definitely.
Well, I love what you guys are doing. I love the contributions. When do we find you, at Fred, at Oliver's?
I am at Oliver's Tuesday through Saturday, typically from 9 to 6.
9 to 6, and we find you in... Are you out wandering around, or are you back in an office?
Typically on the floor. If I'm not on the floor, in our warehouse in the back, making sure that we have actual product on the floor that way. So
so people can ask for you.
People can always ask for me, can always have me paged.
Okay, great. And that's Oliver's in Montecito.
Montecito. And we do have a little bit different whiskey selection there.
Okay.
For obvious reasons, I'm there, and I've been able to coerce them into letting me carry a few other bottles that way.
And we've got a question here.
What's the cost of a membership?
Membership is $50. Okay. Yeah, $50 one time. It's not it doesn't reoccur every year. Uh-huh. It's just a flat fee of $50 and locks you in for life.
And $80 if you want to join as a couple.
And then, Michael, when do people find you at... I mean, you need a couple weeks' notice to make an appointment.
At Williams-Sullivan. Yeah, I'm at Williams-Sullivan Monday through Friday, sometimes Tuesday through Saturday. So I'm there quite a bit. And, yes, you can visit Williams-Sullivan by appointment.
Yeah.
And you can call 707-433-6425.
433-6425.
That's right, 433-6425, or visit williamsilliam.com and send us an email. And I'm there handling customer visits, and and we'll take care of you.
And on that note, we are out of time. Will you guys come back when you get your distilling thing going with Hello Shallow
folks?
Sure,
for sure. Yeah,
definitely.
Awesome. It's been a lot of fun.
Well, thank you so much, and thank you so much for bringing these really fabulous Scotch whiskeys. I won't be here next week because it's Easter. And I'm sure there will be some sort of yummy special on. Meet me back here 2 weeks from tonight on Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour. It's Michelle Anna Jordan. Have a great week. 2 weeks. Have a great 2 weeks.
This story, children, it is plain but true. God knows if a preacher preaches long enough.
Mouthful, the Wine Country's most delicious hour, is produced and hosted by Michelle Anna Jordan, who also selects Mouthful's music. Live episodes are engineered by Michael Young and occasionally by Mary Moore Campagna. Mark Fuller is Mouthful's recording and post-production engineer. Podcasts are available at iTunes and krcb.org. For more information, to suggest a guest, and to find out how to be a guest yourself, email catsmilk@sonic.net or send a message via Mouthful's Facebook page.
Listen to what the preacher says. To the Lord, praise his name.